What's up, Cub fans? Welcome to episode 11 of Locked On Cubs. My name, as always, is Ryan Davis. And not only do I have a great guest this week, but I also have a great friend of mine, Jared Willis. How's it going, Jared?
I'm doing well. I got half of my conference championship picks right. So, okay. Yeah.
So you, I'm going to guess you did not pick the Jaguars.
No, I did. I can't say that I picked them so much as I was rooting for them, although I knew realistically that, like, you know, the odds of the Jaguars beating the Patriots were pretty slim. So,
yeah.
I went with Eagles and Jaguars today.
Oh, yeah. That would have been a good Super Bowl matchup, I think. Not to go too far off baseball, but
right.
I was rooting for the Jaguars for the obvious reasons is the Patriots always win. It's just annoying. And I'm not that big of a football fan anymore, but I do somewhat follow. And I also watch the NBC show The Good Place. And that has really made me just jump on the Jaguars bandwagon because I want to see them win. Because if anyone is familiar with The Good Place, the best character on the show and possibly the best character on TV right now, Jason Mendoza is a big dummy, but he's also a huge Jaguars fan. And he's had a lot of very funny Jaguars moments on that show that just made me fall in love with Blake Bortles, I think. So, yeah, that was kind of disappointing that they lost.
Yeah, see, now I feel like I need to go back and watch that show. I hadn't watched it at all, but I kept seeing references to The Good Place today during the game and especially afterward. And I thought, I've missed something big here. So, yeah, I'm going to have to go back and watch that now.
Yeah, I would suggest it. It's a funny show. Jason is, you'll like it, I think. Knowing your personality, I think you will enjoy that. But anyway, we don't want to drown our fans in football and, sitcoms. So first thing I wanted to talk about is today kind of a Yu Darvish to the Brewers question mark kind of thing. Yahoo Japan was the first to report that the Brewers submitted an official offer to Yu Darvish, and then Yu himself tweeted out that story with a thinky emoji, and then Ken Rosenthal confirmed that the Brewers did make him an offer. So number one for me, how did you interpret the emoji? Was it a I hadn't heard this, or is it a I'm thinking about this?
See, I think the way he has gone about Twitter this whole offseason is my first thought is he's thinking like, this is the first I've heard of this. Mm-hmm. Or, you know, although he has teased that there's another team.
Yeah.
And so this would actually make some sense because, you know, that would answer that question, who that other team is. But I feel like just the way his personality has come across all offseason has been anytime a rumor pops up that's not true, he's all over it.
Yeah.
So the fact that he jumped on this one too makes me kind of think like, there may not be a whole lot to this Brewers thing. I did see, because I tweeted about it and Sean Holland replied to me and said Sean Holland is I think most Cubs Twitter people will know who he is.
Cubs insider writer, I believe.
Yeah, Cubs insider, and he pops up on Cubs Den fairly regularly. But his response, and I actually think it's kind of an interesting theory, was that this is a rumor that's being that's been leaked by his agents in an effort to drive up the price. Mm-hmm. From a team like the Cubs or Astros or, some of the other, or the Twins, some of the other teams that he's been sort of linked to. And so I think that to me makes some sense as a possibility, because the Brewers thing, there's a lot of, I'd have a lot of questions about that. So I'm still inclined to think that, the main teams that he's been linked to so far, it's going to come down to one of those.
Yeah, you brought up the point that what Sean Holland said to you. That was kind of my thinking as well, is this is either a legitimate offer from the Brewers it's what you said. They're using this as leverage, kind of creating something where there wasn't anything. And so that was my thought on why I wouldn't interpret Yu Darvish's thinky emoji as the idea that this is a fake rumor, because it's all in his best interest, even if it is. It's totally his best interest to let it be, let people believe that this is real. So it's fun that we've gotten to the point in the offseason where we're interpreting emoji tweets from free agents to decide what they mean and how that could affect free agency and getting on podcasts to break it down. I probably, if you'd gone back 10 years ago and tried to describe to me what that was, what a thinky emoji on a tweet was, I would have had no idea. So yeah. It's cool that we're in a place where that's what we're doing.
Yeah. Imagine trying to explain that to the 2008 version of yourself. Yeah. Trying to make sense of that. And it being like a perfectly legitimate question to be asking, like, what does this emoji mean? we've reached some interesting times.
Yeah. I believe 2008 was around the time you and I were lurking on a Cubs message board.
Yes,
that was, yeah, that's where we were, message boards, but Twitter eventually killed the message boards, unfortunately. The other part of this question I wanted to ask you is, imagine that Yu Darvish does sign with the Milwaukee Brewers. Obviously it makes a very chief rival of the Cubs even better. But how do the Cubs react to that? Not only does a rival land a pitcher who is the best on the market, a pitcher the Cubs were supposedly after themselves, now the market is down to Jake Arrieta, Alex Cobb, Lance Lynn. You could make a trade, but I don't know who that would be. Or you could stand pat with Mike Montgomery and your kind of, I don't want to say lackluster depth, but your unspecial depth.
Yeah, it's uninspiring depth. That's not.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's not postseason team depth, in my opinion.
Right. Yeah. So for the Cubs' reaction, what do you think? Are they more inclined to give Arrieta a slightly better offer to get him back? Or are they less inclined? Or do you think it's just stay the course, don't react to what the Brewers did?
My first thought is the stay the course, don't react, just because they've never really operated that way, where they make sort of reactionary deals. If Darvish ended up in Milwaukee, that changes the landscape of the division, I think, pretty significantly, because the Brewers have struck me for the last year or so as a team in need of, if they had a decent starting staff, they become a pretty legitimate threat at the division. You know, you think about how close they came just this past year. Mm-hmm. So that changes things notably. But I think as far as what the Cubs do in reaction to that, I don't see them like changing their offer to Arrieta or pursuing a trade all of a sudden. I think they know well enough that they're still a better team, and they don't want to do something that will impact them long term because of a deal like this. So, you know, hurting themselves in 2019, 2020 because they did something now. I do think that if Darvish did end up in Milwaukee, then, you know, maybe they would be more quick to try to get something locked down, but I don't see them trying to offer more money or more years to somebody like Arrieta or Cobb. I just don't see them doing that.
Yeah, I agree with that. That's pretty much where I was with it too, just because Theo Epstein doesn't seem to be all that reactive to what other teams do. I think he's aware of, you know, the Cardinals have gotten better this offseason, for example. I actually was a pretty big fan of the Randall Grichuk trade that they just made, where they turned into Dominic Leone, who's a solid reliever that helps their bullpen. And they had traded a potential bullpen piece in Sandy Alcantara and then some other minor leaguers, including Magnurius Sierra for Marcelo Zuna. So they're better in the outfield. They're better, arguably, in the bullpen. They still have some moves to make. I think they signed Luke Gregerson, who had kind of a down year last year, but has been a solid reliever. So they're probably looking for one more starter, and maybe another bullpen arm. But the Cardinals, it's what they do, right? Like they just hang around. I know they've been basically a 500 team the last 2 years, but they do have some quality young players that may not be superstars, but Paul DeJong is a good hitter. Harrison Bader is a good outfielder who could be part of the outfield depth now that Grichuk and Piscotty are gone. So they have these good players. Carson Kelly probably should be their backup catcher this year and start taking some of that time and learning from Yadier Molina. And he's a solid catching prospect. So you have these teams in the division. Obviously the Pirates are going in a different direction and the Reds aren't going to be there yet, but the Brewers are looking to get better. The Cardinals have gotten better. And the Cubs kind of so far have, I don't want to say stagnated. That gives an impression that I mean something that I don't. But they've kind of just towed the line at this point.
Right.
They're down Arrieta and Lackey and John Jay. And you brought in Tyler Chatwood and you lost Wade Davis too. And you brought in Brandon Morrow. So it's very arguable that the Cubs have not yet improved their team. And that could be a big problem. So at this point, you have to look at making sure that your situation isn't affected by the Brewers signing a guy you were targeting.
Yeah, I agree because I think, I know what you mean about the word stagnating, but in a way it's kind of like what major improvement could you point to, where as in past postseasons, you could look at moves that they made that were pretty obvious. And this postseason, I think for the first time in a couple of years, it's kind of like, well, they're more or less the same as they were before, plus or minus a few guys. And to me, the rotation is the scariest part of the roster, just because of what you have and the very back of that rotation and what you have if somebody gets hurt. Somebody like Hendricks or Lester has to miss a few starts, who are we running with? Those are some pretty big question marks.
Yeah, and I was going to get to one of those names in a little bit, but just to kind of wrap on this segment, I think as far as the position players, you don't have to make a ton of moves because what they have is already really good. But I do think that one player that they've lost from last season's roster that is criminally underrated for what he brings to a team was John Jay. And I think that, any Cubs fan that thinks back on a lot of the big moments from last season, John Jay was involved in some way. He didn't hit for a ton of power. He hit for a high average though. And then he walked a decent rate. So his on base was over 370. When he was specifically in the leadoff spot, he didn't get on base in that spot, but in general, over the course of a whole season, he was getting on base. He was hitting, basically singles and doubles, playing he has a noodle arm, but he was playing an okay outfield. He could play all three outfield spots, just basically the guy who did anything you want him to do. And, you were in the clubhouse just like I was last year.
Right.
Ask anybody about John Jay, and they had nothing but amazing things to say about him. If you tried to go up to him and ask him to brag on himself, he didn't want to do that. So, they basically just absolutely loved him in the clubhouse, and he was just everything they needed him to be. The Cubs need a John Jay, whether it's an outfielder, an infielder, somebody who just does everything and isn't upset about not playing every day. They need another one of those glue guys to take his place.
Yeah, I know. I mean, you could see it in their interactions with him in the clubhouse. And a guy that can make that kind of an impact on his teammates in one season, that says a lot. I was a little surprised that he's just kind of gone. There was never really any real talk of bringing him back. But I agree. I think they're missing a piece like that. Somebody who can fill that role to some degree. Cause I don't know who that is right now.
Right.
They just don't have that guy because they've got a lot of young guys who are defensively flexible, mm-hmm. but they're in a very different position in their careers where they're trying to play every day. And Jay wasn't that guy, and that's why he worked. You know, maybe, you know, Zobrist, depending on what he sees his role being going forward, if he's willing to, you know, give up some more playing time, maybe. But yeah, I think they're missing something there in John Jay that's easy for people to overlook.
Yeah. All right, so let's go ahead and go to our next segment, but first I have a promo. Do you have a company that's looking to target the sports fan demographic? Then you should be sponsoring Locked On Cubs. Our rates are reasonable, so email me at lockedoncubs@gmail.com to find out more information. All right, second segment I have is a question from a fan, and I do appreciate you guys have been a lot more active in the last week, you listeners. It's really awesome. You guys have been emailing me and tweeting me questions. I picked a good one for this week because it plays on the something that I had talked about last week, but I do have, if anybody sent me a question, I've taken it down, so don't worry. We will get to it at some point in the upcoming months. But this question comes from Dan Schmelzer. Hopefully I got that right. Your take on Alzolay being a possible 2018 contributor was interesting. Are there any other specific prospects who you could see making an impact for the Cubs in 2018? And I have two that I think people will recognize the name and think, oh yeah, that makes sense. And then one who I think most people, maybe they've heard of him, but they don't know much about him. Do you have any prospects on your list that you think will make a 2018 impact?
Well, the first name that comes to mind is Dylan Maples.
Yeah, that's
And I know that, you know, his name's been thrown around a lot lately, and there's a reason for that. There's, you know, the fact that I'm not the only guy who's mentioning Dylan Maples, I think, says a lot, because we got a little bit of a look at him last season, and I know the walks probably scared people a little bit. But that's a guy who, you know, if he can get a handle on his command, he would have a major impact on the bullpen. I cannot emphasize that enough. And I rarely, I'm not one for like hyperbole or, you know, blowing things out of proportion, but a Dylan Maples who can improve his command, it's huge for what it does for the bullpen.
Yeah. I was just going to say Dylan Maples, who, if he can command his fastball and his slider, which to be clear, he cannot at this point. It's something right. That even he will admit he,
right.
At least the slider specifically, he has no idea where it's going when he throws it. When you talk about improving his command, a Dylan Maples that throws those pitches, the movement that he has on them, with command and knows where they're going, that's an all-star reliever.
Yeah, I mean, it's when you watch, like, when he throws the slider well, I mean, it's one of the nastiest pitches in baseball.
Yeah.
And I know you were with me at the convention when, I'm going to forget who said it, but one of the Cubs players mentioned, you know, I think the question they were asked was, who's got the best pitch in baseball right now?
Yeah.
And so one of them mentioned him.
Yeah.
And mentioned that slider in particular. And maybe you can remember, I want to say Contreras, but I might be wrong.
I was not at that panel.
Okay.
I was not at the Towing the Rubber panel, unfortunately. I was, I did an interview with Jim Hickey that happened to be taking place during that time. And then I also had to do some transcribing, which is the most fun part of being a baseball reporter. And then I also had to eat lunch. So I missed the Towing the Rubber segment. But yeah, that doesn't surprise me.
Maybe a listener who was there who will remember, has a better memory than I do, because I didn't, like, you know, write it down or anything like that. But yeah, one of the guys was real quick, like didn't even hesitate, brought up Maples, brought up his slider. And so to me, that's your biggest potential impact in 2018 is Maples, if he can get a handle on the command, which is a big question mark.
Yeah.
But if he does, it's you're right, all-star reliever. It's huge.
Yeah, I've said this, I think, before on Twitter, but before Maples came up last year, I spoke to two different people who had seen him at Triple A Iowa. One of them was a scout. They both told me that he has no idea where his slider is going. And one of them told me that it was just the movement on the pitch, the best slider in baseball, period. Not in the organization, not on the team, not in the minors, but in all of baseball, period.
Yeah.
So that's pretty consistent with what you were talking about with him. So that gives, and we're not big on hyperbole. That's what, you said it. I feel the same way. I don't like jumping off a ledge for, banging the drum for somebody, but this, the movement on his pitches, it's very real. But it is a move. It is a command issue for him. If he comes in and can't throw, it's not even a throw strikes thing. It's a know where the pitchers are going. He can throw pitches outside the zone, but with that movement, he'll fool batters like crazy. But he just has to be able to hit his spots and know where they're going.
And we haven't mentioned it, but his fastball, that's a 97 mile an hour fastball too.
Right. So,
I mean, there's some nasty stuff here, but you're right. Like, he's got to be able to locate. Otherwise it's not going to work.
The next pitcher that I have, and we kind of alluded to it when we were talking about depth, Jen Hosang. I know he made two appearances for the Cubs last year. One was in relief and one was in a start where he was kind of nervous and real shaky early on. But so maybe the average fan won't think, oh, what's special about that guy? Because he doesn't throw hard, but he does have good movement on his pitches. He has a good changeup, a very good changeup, actually. And last season in 145 innings between AA and AAA, had a 2.54 ERA. Didn't give up hits. He's hard to get a hit against. He doesn't walk too many. He keeps, I think he had a walks plus hits per innings pitched of around 1.1. This is a guy who has really good stuff and always has, even though he doesn't overpower batters. He's had kind of a comparison to Kyle Hendricks, although I know he throws a little harder than Hendricks does and maybe doesn't have quite the changeup that Hendricks does, although his is good. So that's a guy that I think if I were just lining up my top five, and I think we all know who the top five are at this point, Lester, Hendricks, Quintana, Chatwood, five in your rotation as of right now. If I were to put in my number six, I would probably lean towards Singh.
Yeah, I think I'd have to agree.
Not a big Eddie Butler fan.
I've seen enough of Eddie Butler I'm just not so much. I think Singh we didn't see a whole lot of last season, and so I'm sort of hopeful that he gets a more prolonged look in 2018, meaning, let's see him for four or five starts in a row. It's like you mentioned his changeup. And so, like, he got a, it's a small sample, but he got a 35% whiff rate on that changeup.
Yeah.
In a small sample last season, his cutter is pretty solid too. And so he's got some really, some quality stuff, even if it's not coming in particularly fast. I mean, his fastball is it's a low 90s fastball. So yeah, he's like not
90, 91, 92, that kind
of thing. Yeah. He's not exactly bringing it. I think depending on what happens with the rotation, he's another guy that's got a legitimate shot, but some of that too will depend on like what they do in free agency. Because if let's say the Cubs get Darvish or it is Arrieta that comes back, that means there's really only one spot in the rotation for someone else to get. And even then, that's you've got that would push Chatwood to the back of the rotation.
Yeah. And then the starts that Chatwood misses or if he lands yell, that's Mike Montgomery time.
Montgomery, exactly. So the biggest thing for Singh might be he's going to be blocked in the rotation for another year or so. But if he does get a chance, I think he's a legitimate possibility to give some quality starts.
Yeah, I think in a lesser organization, I don't mean that like insultingly, but in an organization, I guess, that's not ready to contend. If he were with the Cincinnati Reds, he's a legit number four or number five on that team.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. And it's kind of akin to what we say about Tommy La Stella. You know, he would start on a lot of teams. So I think there's something similar to that. Yeah, I agree. He'd be in a rotation without any trouble in a lot of organizations.
All right, last guy that I put on my list, and this one's kind of an outside the box, would probably require some injuries before he actually really hit the field, just because they're infield depth. But a guy named David Bote, I believe is how you pronounce his last name, B-O-T-E. He was an 18th round pick in 2012. He's on the 40-man roster now because he had to be rostered this offseason. So there's no obstacle in getting him to the big leagues. If I remember correctly, he is the only real infielder on the 40-man that's not projected to be on the 25-man roster. There might be somebody else. I don't have it up in front of me. But so, you know, in the event of an infield injury or two, that could be a guy who comes up to the big leagues. He's probably going to AAA this year. His 2017 was not all that special. He was at double A. He had 272, the 353 on base, and a 438 slugging. But his 2016, between high A, double A, and triple A, hit 328 with a 399 on base and 492 slugging. So this is a guy who can hit. And he was an 18th round pick. I think he's going to be 25 this year. So it's kind of outside the box, like I said, but this is a guy who I think could be on the big league roster and could, you know, if there's a couple injuries, which there always are, could make some sort of impact.
Well, and if you look defensively too, he's really been a little bit of everywhere, which is a good way to be for a guy like him. He can play any spot in the infield. He's even spent some time in the outfield as well. I mean, he's played actually everywhere. And if you look back far enough, he's actually pitched a couple of times.
Yeah, I was going to say, I know he pitched, in 2015, he pitched four times for six innings. Wow.
Yeah, and now some night I'm going to have to go look at the game logs and figure out what exactly happened that put him on the mound four times that season.
That's crazy. Look, he almost had a quality start.
In his four
appearances at South Bend in 2015, six innings, eight hits, four earned runs, two home runs, one walk, three strikeouts.
Yeah. Yeah. That's interesting. I'm going to have to dig into that more at some point, but yeah, I think he's a good pick too, because I know he did well in the Arizona Fall League this year. And I believe spent some time in one of the winter leagues as well. And so he's quietly a guy who, you know, maybe a lot of Cubs fans, if he got called up in the upcoming season, they'd have to like go Google search and find out who he is. But, I agree. I think probably should there be an injury in the offense, he's going to be one of the first guys to get called up. Largely because of you can put him anywhere. And he has
land outfield.
Yeah. Yeah.
Classic utility infielder. I mean, I think what we're really getting around on saying is even if his future is not with the Cubs, he's a guy who will have a 10-year major league career most likely, because he can play anywhere, he can hit a little bit, and he can be your classic utility infielder.
Yeah, they're gonna, you know, wherever he goes, he's gonna have a spot, because, yeah, again, you can put him just about anywhere. He's only 24, so he could even spend another year or two in the minors before he really gets that break. But yeah, he's an interesting possibility as well.
Yeah, and I just looked up the active roster, and I was correct. He is the only infielder listed on the 40-man that is not a projected 25-man roster. The other guys are Baez, Bryant, La Stella, Rizzo, Russell, Zobrist. So if there is an injury up the middle, let's say to Addison, Russell, and Baez has to slide over and you have to put Zobrist at second base more often, I think they're at a point, or LaStella is a good example of putting him at second base. I think they're at a point where if they needed to call up a guy who could play shortstop, it absolutely has to be David Bote.
Yeah, because you're, yeah, outside of, you know, Baez, Russell, he would be the next guy up.
He would be the third on the depth chart.
Yeah, so I think he's a name to remember for the upcoming season, that's for sure, because it's very likely he's going to get called up at some point.
All right, I guess let's go on to the next segment. So this is kind of just a riff segment, I guess. I just wanted to talk to you because we both had the experience of going to games as credentialed media. We did the playoffs. I'm bragging quite a bit on us, but we had a good time doing that. I know I loved being in the clubhouse and getting that experience. It helps you see the game and the players through a completely different lens, which I think is beneficial for us doing podcasts and writing, kind of sharing our lens for the fans. Most looking forward to in this upcoming year, versus, you know, is it, you know, either just going to games or seeing the team plays, or anybody you are looking forward to talking to? What's your excitement level for the upcoming season?
I think, like you mentioned, having had quite a bit of experience this past season in being able to be in the clubhouse and talk to people, it changed. I mean, you see things a lot differently. I feel like I learned a tremendous amount about just, you know, going about that whole process. It's made me see things a lot differently. And so I'm looking forward to just doing more of that and having had the experience, feeling like just a little more comfortable about, you know, how best to approach players and that kind of thing. What kinds of things I want to write about in the upcoming season. But I think one of the things that I'm most looking forward to keeping an eye out for the Cubs specifically, because I'm going to try to get my way into a few different clubhouses in the upcoming season, but is just looking for that, you know, that element of like team leadership and clubhouse culture, because, you know, you have what is still a very young team, but they're a very young team with a ton of postseason experience. And so, you know, they're young in years, but they're old in experience. And so, you know, a big deal was made out of David Ross and his role with the team a couple of seasons ago. And this element of like clubhouse leaders, team leaders, you know, who are those guys? So I'm looking forward to kind of exploring how that dynamic changes in the upcoming season as they look to get back to the postseason again. So one of the guys I'm going to keep a close eye on is Kyle Schwarber, not just for what he does at the plate on the field, but also like his clubhouse presence, how he conducts himself in there. So he's kind of my guy to keep a close eye on this year.
Yeah, I also have a guy that I'm very interested in keeping a close eye on this year, and that's Kyle Hendricks. Just because I enjoy speaking to him, he's as cerebral in conversation as he is on the mound. And I talked quite a bit about him on my last podcast after the Cubs convention, but he is, if you're ever in the clubhouse wanting to talk pitching with somebody, if it's not Hendricks's day to start, he's generally pretty happy to talk to you about pitching mechanics and movement on his pitches and just all that, you know, kind of nerdy pitching stuff. So that's going to be my guy that I'm probably going to lean on this year. And then other than that, I built a solid relationship, a writer baseball player relationship, as far as that goes, with Albert Almora Jr. I first interviewed him in 2016 at AAA Iowa. It was after that short stint that he made in the big leagues, and then he went back and played until I think September in Iowa, and I interviewed him there, and we had a good conversation. I wrote a piece for BP Wrigleyville back then, and then I also spoke to him a couple times last year, and that's a guy that I think, you know, with John Jay gone, this is a guy that I think should be probably maybe not every day in the outfield, because it's hard to name more than maybe two or three everyday players on this roster, but mostly every day. I think he's talented enough that he should be out there maybe 4 out of every 6 games, we'll say.
And speaking of Hendricks, I can confirm, because I've seen it happen, he does smile and laugh. I watched you interview him at the convention, and so I've seen it firsthand, so I can back that up. He's not always like the professorial kind of guy. I've seen some laughter from him. So
I believe I went over that pretty hard on the last podcast, and I also wrote about that. I'm sure you saw. One of the big points. Yeah, that I'm not lying about this. I'm not making it up for my own.
Ryan is not making this up. I've seen it myself.
My own financial benefit of making up stories about Hendricks actually being a normal guy. He's just a very different person in between the lines versus outside the lines. In between the lines, he is as robotic as everybody sees him with their own eyes, but outside the lines, he's actually a pretty fun guy.
Yeah.
Well, that's it for the baseball talk. I wanted to bring up a little bit. I know, Jared, you saw this. And I had talked to you about it before. I've got some writing positions open at the website. Just to give a little bit of background, Locked On is an entire podcast network started by David Locke, who is the radio voice of the Utah Jazz. And there have been Locked On NBA and Locked On NFL, but no Locked On MLB. And so recently we kind of started up the Locked On MLB. And it was basically with beta testing is the easiest thing to say for what we're doing. It was just Jesse Spector with Locked On Yankees and me with Locked On Cubs. Locked On recently struck a deal with FanRag Sports, who I also write for, where they launched the websites and where the podcasts go. But there's also the ability to add writers and have people actually writing about the teams on those sites. And I don't think every site has moved real hard into having a lot of writers, but basically the deal was I receive a large portion of the revenue for what is written and posted on the site, so long as I have a certain amount of original content. And I thought the best way of going about that was to bring on some writers, allow them to write, and me to edit and not write anything, and then just give the writers the bulk of the revenue while taking a fair share for my own effort of editing and managing the site. So I thought that was a good idea. For everyone who's applied already, you're awesome. There are so many great applications, and I'm still sifting through all of it. But just to give a little bit more of the detail, revenue share has its pluses and minuses. Obviously, every writer would prefer to be paid with a flat rate. That's what I get other places that I write. So even if my work doesn't hit, some of them hit the mark where I'm paid, I still get paid no matter what. And then maybe other ones do a lot better and I still get that flat rate. So that's the benefit of a flat rate that you don't get with revenue sharing. But on the flip side of it, a lot of writers are exploited in this industry. I think, we both know sites that have done that to their writers, maybe even to us. With the proportion of the revenue that you would get with writing for Locked On Cubs, even if you're not making a whole lot of money, you have the peace of mind of knowing I'm not getting rich on what you're writing. No one else above you is getting rich while you're getting pennies on the dollar for your effort. The bulk of the revenue will be fairly distributed to the writers. So that's what I'm really excited about. If somebody had come to me and said, hey, you need to bring on writers and you can't pay them anything, I would have basically just said no. I'll just keep doing the podcast and I'm not going to bring on writers that I can't pay a dime. So that's my stance on it, how I feel about it. I wanted to expand a little bit on that so that the listeners can understand where I'm coming from and that anybody who has applied can understand what they're jumping into if they do get an email back from me about writing for the site. Is I don't know how much money anyone will get paid, but I do know that if the site's making money, you will get your fair share of that. And that's something I'm really proud of and I'm really looking forward to. I'm really looking forward to a site that's All Cubs, and is Quality Writing, where you guys can go to find this podcast and also find game recaps or analytical stuff, or, you know, just regular Cubs related stuff. I don't know. Do you have anything to add on top of that? I know you're not part of the site. You're just my guest, but
I mean,
you're along for the ride.
Well, yeah. I mean, as someone with no real stake in it, because you know, I'm just a guest. The fact that there's, you know, I'll make a plug for this just because there are a lot of places that will put out calls for writers or advertise for writers that can't pay or just aren't going to. So when you find a place that is making that a priority, I think that's something that you take advantage of as a writer, because the time, the effort, the thought that you put into the work that you do, you deserve to be paid for it. Even right. if it's a small amount, at least you can say, I've got something for this. Cause it's a hard reality of the writing world, especially if you're somebody who's trying to break into it that isn't coming through the traditional track, mm-hmm. Like both Ryan and I. Sometimes you are in a spot where you kind of have to, you know, you write for free for a little while. It's one thing. Yeah, it is. And I wish it wasn't that way. And I don't necessarily encourage anybody to do that. I don't know that I even suggest it. I don't think it's a good thing. But I know for me, it led to bringing me to where I am now, which is I'm very happy with. But all that to say, when you find a site like this, like Locked On Cubs, that's offering you pay, whatever it might be, you take advantage of that, because it's a rare thing. It's a good thing.
Yeah. Again, I have to stress, because I don't want anyone who does get hired on to be disappointed with whatever the pay may be. But yeah, the big thing for me, and I think for a lot of writers, is whether the pay is a lot or very little, knowing that no one else is exploiting you to make a ton of money is the big thing. I would rather be somewhere where I know if I write for a month and I only get $5 of revenue share, that $5 is not somebody else's $300 or $1,000. Nobody else is getting rich because you are getting the bulk of the revenue. And that's something that's important to me. It's hard to monetize in this business, which is something you and I know, and I think a lot of people know. But I think people who are dedicated and care about writing and want to write about the Cubs and want to be somewhere where, you have somebody editing your work and, you're with a name, a brand that is good and hosted by FanRag Sports. I think who has become a quality site in this industry. I think it's a good opportunity, and I hope that there's a lot of people who are excited about what we're about to do with Locked On Cubs this year, because I think we're going to be doing some good things.
Yeah, and I think, and you sort of offhandedly mentioned it, but I think for somebody who's a budding writer or somebody who's trying to break in, there's two things to look for. Does the site that you want to write for have somebody who edits the work? Because that's really important.
Yeah.
And not just like, you know, checking your grammar or punctuation, but somebody who's managing the content, who has a stake in what goes up on the site. That's so important. That, and does the site value compensating you, even if it's a small amount? Are they making a point to give you something? Those are two things to keep an eye out for.
I absolutely agree. Well, that brings us to the rambling end of our podcast. Thank you again for being my excellent guest and my excellent friend. Go ahead and tell our listeners where they can find you.
Yeah. Of course, on Twitter, I'm at Jay Willis. It's JWYLLYS. I apologize for the Welsh spelling. It's a little tricky for some people, but I'm there, and I'm on sporting news on a pretty regular basis. I'm doing a weekly column right now, picking out a breakout candidate for each team. And I'm a few weeks out from kind of wrapping that up, but you can go and look at, you know, all the old ones that I've done. And so that's where most of my work will pop up this season, is at sporting news. And occasionally I'll show up other places like Chicago Magazine, but for the most part, sporting news, that's where you'll see my stuff.
And you're always welcome to put any Cubs related stuff that the Sporting News doesn't want on Locked On Cubs.
I'll probably take you up on that.
All right. Well, thanks again, everybody, for listening. And I'll be back again, probably early this week with another podcast, but I'm going to be in Florida. So I don't know how regular I'll be late in the week or next weekend, but you'll have another podcast coming soon, I'm sure.